Hi everyone, my name is Nijaz Nazar. I'm an ED hospitalist at Montefiore Einstein, New York. Today I'm proud to present our Health Tech Innovation Podcast on the mechanics of creating a podcast. Our program is hosted by the Montefiore Einstein Innovation Biodesign Training Program. Today our podcast guest is Dr. Daniel Belkin. Dr. Belkin graduated from Albert Einstein College of Medicine in 2022. He's currently a transitional year intern at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. After his intern year, he will complete his residency in radiology at Johns Hopkins. In his free time, Dr. Belkin hosts a podcast focused on medical innovation called the External Medicine Podcast. Neither Dr. Belkin nor I have any relevant relationships to disclose. Dr. Belkin, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today and welcome to the podcast.
It's good to be here.
Can you take a few moments and explain your interest in this space and the work that you have done in creating and launching podcasts?
Sure. So a couple of years ago, Dr. Suni Jariwala and I decided to create this podcast, and we started finding interesting innovators and medical entrepreneurs to talk to. And that led to myself starting my own podcast with my brother, focused more on big ideas within medicine. And, you know, at this point, I've done podcasting for the last couple of years. It's a very interesting art form. And yeah, it's a great opportunity to continue to learn and help other people learn about different topics.
Can you describe the components, format, and topics for a successful podcast?
Sure. So there are many different ways that you can do a podcast. You can do very short podcasts, sort of medium-sized podcasts, or much longer podcasts. I think that the main way that you decide what podcast you want to do depends on the type of podcast it's going to be. And obviously you can mix and match between these different categories, but you could just have a podcast where you talk about a particular issue, or you have a co-host who you talk to about a particular issue or series of issues. Those tend to be a little bit shorter, although in theory, those could go on for hours. You can do an interview-based podcast, which is sort of what this show is and sort of what my own podcast is, where you invite someone on and you ask them a bunch of questions and you see where the conversation goes. You can also do podcasts that are more radio programs, where you can kind of have interludes in between different sections. You can interview a bunch of different people and sort of stitch those together into a cohesive whole. So if I wanted to interview you about a particular, or let's say I wanted to make a podcast about being an ED hospitalist. So I could interview you, I could interview other people who are ED hospitalists and kind of create a quilt of different stories about the topic and then put that together into an episode. It really depends on how much work you want to do and how much time you want to spend doing it.
Coming to the next question, how often should podcasts be and for how long?
So, you know, a podcast can be 5 minutes, 20 minutes, an hour, 5 hours. Different types of podcasts are going to have different lengths that make more sense for them. It would be weird to do a 20 minute, or like, it would be weird to do a 5 minute interview-based podcast, and it would also probably be weird to do a five-hour monologue on a particular topic, although it can be done. You could probably do each of those. In terms of how often you do them, I think this is personal preference, but I don't think someone wants to listen to a new podcast that's an hour long every day. So releasing an hour-long podcast every day of the week is unlikely to develop an audience in the same way that maybe doing it once a week or two times a week or once every other week. would do. But if you're doing a 5-minute podcast, maybe it does make sense to do it every day. So I think that the you can play around with this. I also think that there's an element of, you know, that there's that finding in social psychology that if you give someone, or you give like a pellet to a rat and you do it like consistently, every time they push the button, you give them the pellet, that will build a response, a positive response to that stimulus. But if you really want to make the rat just crazy for the pellet, you do it more intermittently. So sometimes when the rat pushes the button, it gets a pellet, and sometimes it doesn't. So I do think that there is something to be said for playing around with the different release dates. So, you know, maybe you're usually an every week type of podcast or an every other week type of podcast, but every once in a while you throw something in randomly, which kind of makes people more interested rather than less interested. But that's my own opinion. I'm not saying that there's any data to back up that claim.
How does one get started and which equipment is helpful?
So this is the beautiful thing about the world that we live in now. You could probably get started with having almost no upfront costs. You could just record on your iPhone that you already own and, you know, cut off the audio and put it online. But I think that probably having a microphone is pretty helpful. You can get really cheap microphones on Amazon or at your local microphone store for, you know, $20, $30. They have very good ones, surprisingly good ones for like $80 to $100. If you want to go full on professional, you can get $1,000 mics, but you only really need a $20 mic to sound pretty good. I think you get 80% of the benefit with a very small percentage of the cost. Other equipment you'll probably need is editing software. So some type of way to take the audio and sculpt it if, you know, someone leaves a gigantic pause in the middle of their statement. Like, let's say I wanted to get rid of that pause that I just did, then I could cut it out in an audio editing software. And that can be free, or you can spend money on it. If you're associated with a university, they usually have something that you can use licensed through them. So, you know, some good examples of this would be Audacity is a free version, and Adobe Audition is an audio editing license thing that you can get through a university. They have many, many other different options for that. And those are the main things I think that you're going to need to do. I mean, I don't know if we're going to talk about like getting a website or getting hosting for the podcast, but that's sort of the next element too. If you want to have a website, you can either go the less expensive route where you have to do more stuff on your own and buy the domain and get, you know, the hosting and all that stuff. Or you could use, they have services where you can kind of build a website very easily. So you can do this through Buzzsprout, I think, has an option for this, which is also a podcast hosting site. You can also do this on WordPress. So they have different options, and there are small costs associated with each of those things. But ultimately, it's I think for most people, it's a pretty small amount of money up front.
So once the podcast interview has been completed, what are the next steps to launch the podcast?
So once you record it, you're going to want to listen to it, make sure it sounds good, add some music on the front end or back end if you want, add an intro where you record yourself saying, hey, this is my podcast and this is the name of the podcast. And if you want to subscribe, go here, and, you know, stuff like that. So you can turn it into a cohesive whole that's ready to see the to see other people's eardrums. You can also take the audio and sort of do some smoothing, where if it's too loud in places, you can bring the volume down. If it's too low. You can try to bring the volume up. You can put filters on it. You can get kind of fancy with how you do this. I think in general, unless the audio sounds really bad, you don't want to spend too long doing that because you can really get into the weeds. But if you want to get into the weeds and make it sound as good as possible in post-production, you can totally do that as well.
How can podcasts be continuously improved through listener feedback and data analytics?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that most podcasts are a dialogue or end up being a dialogue between you and your audience. So, you know, you have friends and family who will listen. You have people who end up finding the podcast and will send you comments. I think in, you know, especially in the early stages of a podcast, it's a very good idea to be in touch with people who enjoy the podcast in some way. Usually these are going to be people you already know, and then to solicit feedback and say, look, like, what do you think is working? What do you think is not working? And obviously you don't want to take every single suggestion that everyone gives to you because there'll be too many cooks in the kitchen. But in general, it's good to see how things are landing. Are these too long? Is it too short? Are you getting bored? Do you think I should cut this question and this answer because it doesn't, you know, further things, or it kind of goes off into the weeds or whatever? And this also depends on how much you want to conform to the particular audience that you have at one point in time. It's also possible that you want your podcast to be a particular thing and it hasn't quite found the audience that you want for it yet. So in that case, you would disregard most of the feedback that you got because you hadn't quite achieved what you aimed to do. And once you were closer to what you thought was what you wanted, then you can start tinkering around with things to change.
What advice would you give to a clinician interested in creating a podcast series?
I mean, the advice would probably just go ahead and try it. I think people tend to learn things by doing things more so than by thinking about them or spending too long researching them. I think with this particular topic, podcasting, it's just so easy to do. It only makes sense to just jump in with both feet and see how it goes.
How do you see podcasts evolving in the next 2 to 3 years?
How do I see podcasts evolving in the next 2 to 3 years? I mean, that's such a short period of time. It's hard to know, like, if any real evolution is going to happen in that short a time period. I do think that podcasting is a way to develop one's own ideas and start putting them into the world. So there is a podcaster, Econ Talk with Russ Roberts. Russ Roberts now is president of a university in Jerusalem. But when he started making the podcast 20 years ago, he was just an academic, like an economist at a regular university. So he slowly grew to what he currently is. As he was podcasting, he has like almost 1,000 episodes at this point. So I do think that podcasting is becoming seen as more legitimate. I think that it is more valuable for individual clinicians to develop their ideas as opposed to institutions. The more individualized the podcast, the more people tend to respond positively to it. So having so-and-so's podcast as opposed to this journal's podcast or this newspaper's podcast or this university's podcast, I think ends up being more, people want to listen to that more. But this also isn't to say that people don't listen to the journal podcast or the university podcast. It's just an observation that I've made.
What are the risks and benefits of these technologies?
The risks and benefits. I'm not sure that there are too many risks. I mean, I guess the risks would be something like disseminating ideas and there are good ideas and bad ideas. So having a way for just an individual person to get on a mic and say, here are my ideas, and then that getting into the minds of all sorts of other people, is there's risk to intellectual contagion in that sense. But I don't know if that is that high of a risk. I mean, to me, it sort of reminds me of in the 1500s, once they developed the printing press. This is around like Martin Luther's time, where there was a lot of concern. What if we translate the Bible into all these different languages instead of it just being Latin, which could only be understood by a select group? What if everyone becomes literate and everyone is able to understand the Bible and they can interpret it in whatever way they want? And this was a legitimate fear by the Catholic Church at the time. And I think we would say today, of course we want the Bible translated into every single language. Everyone should be able to read the Bible and understand it. But it's not like the risks that the Catholic Church were talking about were not real. After they did translate the Bible into all sorts of other languages, like German, then you had a bunch of people who were translating the Bible in particular ways, and there was all sorts of conflict that erupted as a result. So this is a long-winded way of for me to say that I think you're going to have misinformation and disinformation in any environment in which people are allowed to say what they think. But ultimately, I think that that's not a reason to restrict. I think that the downsides to there being only one approved voice allowed to speak on a particular topic are also too numerous.
Thank you again for taking the time to be with us today. I had a wonderful conversation discussing about the mechanics of creating a podcast with you. Is there anything else you would like to add, Dr. Belkin?
No. It's been a pleasure being on the show on the other side, and I'll talk to you soon.